With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Hey, everybody knows Weber grills. I've been using Weber grills my whole life, and check it out. They got a pellet grill, the Weber Searwood pellet grill. Now, with a pellet grill, you can smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill. You can go from low and slow, okay, on smoke boost mode, or crank this thing all the way to a heat sear at 600 degrees. It's got a full great sear zone, so you can put more food on the flame. Get fired up for your new Weber Searwood pellet grill.
The Volume.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel. Football season is here, and there's no better place to get in the action than with FanDuel. The app is safe, secure, and easy to use. FanDuel always has exclusive offers. When you win, you'll get paid fast. FanDuel has lots of ways to play, like the spread, money line, over-unders, team totals, player props, and so much more. Jump into the action at any time during the game with live betting, combine multiple bets in the same game in a same-game parlay, and try out the same game parlay plus. So use promo code BOXING and download the FanDuel app today to make every moment more this football season.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, so how many rounds did you hit the bag today?
10. I've been hitting 10 rounds a day, every day for about almost going on a month.
Is this officially a comeback?
I'm ready. I'll be honest with you, man. For 22 years that I was a professional, I've never stayed in shape when I was off camp. You know, and right now that I'm an older person, I train every day and I like it.
So you're announcing right now your comeback to boxing?
Absolutely not.
That, I mean, sounds like it.
Unless you know who.
Well, there are a couple of you know who's. Well, there's Jake Paul, which most people that listen to this podcast know. And there's Oscar De La Hoya, who you thought you were going to fight after winning the title against Forrest, and then life got in the way.
I'll go from Jake Paul to De La Hoya. Easy money. The golden boy to the golden ticket.
I think it's the reverse, but the whatever. Our next partner has a product that I use literally every day. I'm not just saying that. I started taking AG1 because it is exactly what I need when I wake up in the morning and need that little push to get into the gym. It makes me feel great. It gets me through every one of these workouts. It benefits my lifestyle tremendously. It gives me more energy, better digestion. My mornings are so much better when I take AG1. It's the best option for easy, optimal nutrition out there. You can take one scoop of AG1 and you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, whole food source superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to help you start your day right. This blend of ingredients supports your gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, your energy, recovery, focus, and aging. All those things really good, especially as you hit your 40s. Sustainable routines are key. AG1 is my daily micro habit that makes it easy to absorb key nutrients, lead a healthy lifestyle, and feel my best no matter what the day holds. One scoop, 1 minute, once a day, every day. Right now, it's time to reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. Just one scoop in a cup of water every day. That's it. No need for a million different pills and supplements to look out for your health. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free one-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Mannix. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Mannix to take ownership of your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. Sergio Mora is here, former junior middleweight champion, DAZN broadcaster. I want to start this podcast, Sergio, with what we talked about last weekend, the Joe Joyce, Joseph Parker fight. Last weekend, Joyce, the 2016 Olympic silver medalist, he picked up his most impressive win as a pro, knocking out Joe Parker in the 11th round to win an interim version of one of the heavyweight titles. Joyce is now 15-0 with 14 wins coming by way of knockout. Sergio, how impressed were you with Joe Joyce's performance?
Very impressed. Very impressed. I mean, he knocked out a former champion that only Anthony Joshua wasn't able to knock him out. Dillian White wasn't able to knock him out. I mean, it's really impressive for him to go straight forward and hunt him down, because Parker was in the fight. He was boxing really nicely, and I knew that it wasn't going to go the distance. I mean, he just didn't have enough power and respect and size, but, I mean, he fought a valiant fight, Parker did. But it just goes to show you what kind of, you know, juggernaut you're dealing with. I mean, he's a beast. He cuts off the ring. He's imposing. He looks slow and hittable, but when you fall off balance, he catches you with that power. Guys like that, you don't want to miss against, let alone, you know, throw more than two punches. It's hard to beat a big George Foreman, you know, type like that. You got to outbox him and stick and move, and, oh, man, it takes a lot.
It's the pressure that's the hardest thing
to deal with. It's intimidating, man.
I mean, he and this was the biggest problem I thought Parker had. Like, Parker would throw some good combinations. He would land, and then he'd spin out, believing he would get 3 or 4 seconds to recover. But the second he kind of turned to face Joyce, he was right there in his face. And Parker eventually succumbed to all that. I was really impressed with Joyce. When Joyce came out of the Olympics in 2016, I was like, all right, well, this guy's okay. He's got some pop, but he's lumbering. You know, his jab isn't particularly sharp. I thought he had a ceiling to him. Now, you can certainly make the argument that Joyce is the second best heavyweight in all of boxing, because Parker...
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, I mean, look, you can make the argument, I'm saying. I don't know that he is either. I think, you know, Usyk, certainly with 3 versions of the title. Joshua's still there, a more accomplished heavyweight. Wilder's still there. But he's now up there among the better fighters, because, as you said, he did what Andy Ruiz couldn't do, what Anthony Joshua couldn't do, what Dillian White couldn't do. He knocked out Joe Joyce. Chisora, I'm not as impressed by, but... He knocked this guy out. And look, you said that Parker was boxing well early, and maybe the first round or second round he was. But you get to that third round, and look, I bet on Parker. Like, I thought Parker was going to win. He was my pick for the upset. But by the third round, I'm like, oh, shit, this is a problem. He's not going to be able to keep this guy off of them. Just the relentless pressure of Joyce is just...
And I don't know if you remember, we did this podcast, and you asked me what I thought, and I said, I think a late-round stoppage, I don't think it crosses the finish line. It's going to be a late round stoppage. And sure enough, man, that's exactly what it was. But once again, we got to give Parker some credit. For him to be in with the heavyweight champions that he was in with and not be stopped. And then finally, he does really well. I mean, he won some rounds. There were hard fought rounds that he won. There weren't many, but he made it an entertaining fight. And he was there to win. So you got to just admire what the juggernaut did in knocking out someone like that's tricky to pin down. And he didn't give up until he finally did it, and it came late.
How would you describe Joyce's power? Because I have a hard time. I know we mentioned Foreman as the comp, but like that jab, it doesn't look especially powerful. It doesn't look as sharp as Joshua's jab sometimes look like, but he just paws out there with it and connects with it and aims it right at your skull. And then the right hands, like, they're wide, and he loads up on them a lot. And even when he connects, I'm not sitting there going, like, it's not Wilder-esque with that power. Like, how would you describe kind of his punching power?
Well, I like the word you use in describing him, lumbering, because he is lumbering. I mean, he's the definition of lumbering. But I would describe him of a mix of a George Foreman and like a Riddick Bowe without the speed. You know, one of those mix, because Bo had some hands on him. And it looks like it's not going to hurt you, because his power is that heavy and it's that slow. He's like Alfredo Angulo. Angulo was one of the slowest guys I've ever fought, but he grazed you and he hurt you. He had heavy hands. That's the kind of power that I think Joyce has. Kind of, you know, that Lennox Lewis heavy-handed power where he catches you at the end, he turns your lights out, but he's even bigger than Lennox Lewis. So just serious power, man. You can't teach that.
No, he certainly got it. A lot of fights I'd like to see Joe Joyce in next. Joyce, Deontay Wilder. Oh, man. I'd love to see that. Joyce, Tyson Fury. Joyce, Anthony Joshua. But you've seen what Joyce is now, 37 years old. How hard do you think it's going to be for him to get a big fight?
It's going to be hard.
Yeah.
It's going to be really
hard. I
agree. It's going to be hard. They're going to wait him out. You know, he's 37, like you said.
But don't you think, like, we keep mentioning Foreman, right? Like, Foreman was fighting in his 40s and still pretty effective as a heavyweight. I think Joyce could be one of those guys that when he hits the age of 40, if he wants to, he can still be a really good heavyweight.
I agree with you. That's a great point, and it's because he's lumbering. He's not quick. He doesn't rely
on granite chin. He
has a chin. Well, if you're going to have a longevity in the sport, you need chin. But he's very strong. He doesn't rely on fast twitch muscles, which that benefits an older fighter. The thing that really, you know, makes fighters retire and after the 35 years old, they don't have the fast twitch. They don't have the legs anymore. They don't have the stamina. They don't have the endurance. They can't take the punch anymore. All that starts falling apart as a heavyweight when you're naturally not a fast twitch fighter. You're not very, you don't rely on speed. You just rely on that heavy-handed, slow thumping power that doesn't need to connect. Guys like that can last long in their career because it only takes one punch. So I can see Joyce fighting into his 40s, early 40s, absolutely.
Yeah, but for the short term, we know Usyk is not going to face him. At least we don't think so. I don't see Deontay Wilder facing him anytime soon. He's got a path with Helenius and then probably Andy Ruiz. Joshua's got his own path, which we're going to get into in a couple of minutes. Here's a name for you. What about Jarrell Miller for Joe Joyce?
Big baby.
Jarrell Miller, to remind people where Jarrell Miller is, you know, back in 2019, he lost out on the Anthony Joshua fight because he tested positive for multiple banned substances. It happened again about a year later, just over a year later. When he was scheduled to fight on a top rank card. He has come back recently. He's won two very low-level fights in a row. He had a show or a fight scheduled for this weekend in Kazakhstan. It was canceled because of reasons unrelated to Jarrell Miller. But I look at Jarrell Miller as being an interesting opponent for Joe Joyce because you've got to get past all the bullshit, which is legitimate, all the drug tests and all that stuff, but he's still undefeated. He's got a big mouth. He's known to the British public because he spent weeks and weeks promoting the AJ fight. I kind of like that fight for Joe Joyce if he wants to make it.
I like it too. And that, I didn't even think of Big Baby Miller because you said it. He has a big mouth. He's a self-promoter. He gets under your skin. And Joyce is not going to promote a fight with his mouth. So, you know, he might backflip and get your attention, but he's not going to go out there and start cussing opponents out and, you know, act like that. So I like that. I actually like that fight. I mean, if Dillian White's not around, I like Baby Miller better because of that O. He hasn't been beaten. That always looks great on a fighter's resume. If you can take away that donut, that zero, it looks good on yours. It's a feather on your cap. And when it comes to Dillian White, I like that fight because they're both British. I mean, Dillian White's always in a great fight. He's only been, you know, beat by the guys in the top. And I think it'll be a fantastic style matchup with a guy that's been in there with every style you could think of, and power is not enough to intimidate him.
I think Dillian White would have a lot of problems with Joe Joyce. Like, Dillian has that big left hook, but you saw what happened with Tyson Fury. Joyce isn't as talented as Fury, but he's Fury's size, and we know he can take a punch. He's going to keep coming, and I think he eventually gets to Dillian White. I like the Jarrell Miller fight. If you believe Jarrell Miller deserves another chance, how do you feel on that? As a former fighter, do you believe Jarrell Miller, after testing positive multiple times for serious banned substances, he's not testing positive for what could have been tainted meat, he's testing positive for stuff that gets injected into your body. How do you feel about Jarrell Miller getting another chance at a big fight?
He's human, man. Listen, we all hate cheaters, but he's already got his punishment. I mean, I think he's already lost
millions.
He's lost out on millions and a potential
tens of millions, really,
and a potential heavyweight championship if he would have won. And what? He's in his mid-30s, 34?
I think he's younger than that, maybe. We can check, but I think he's younger than that.
I think he's in his 30s from what I remember.
Yeah, but younger.
But either way, I think age matters. That's what I'm saying. But yes, I believe he does need another chance because...
He is 34. You're right. Just turned 34 this past summer.
There you go. So he needs a big fight. You know, he's getting to that age, but he does have that undefeated record, and he is a bad boy. He is a self promoter, and he can fight. He's a big man with quick hands. I'll give him another chance. And look, man, I'm a fighter. I would hate to have thought that I went in there with someone that cheated and used PEDs. I hate the fact when fighters get tested and they get PEDs in their system after the fight, before the fight, and everything goes to shit. Or when they deny it, no one's ever going to admit, yeah, you know, I tried to cheat, but they caught me. No one's ever going to say that.
If anyone should, it's Jarrell Miller. I mean, the stuff he was caught with.
Dude, like, he got caught with like five different substances.
There was no backing out of it. But look, no tainted meat excuse.
But back
there.
To what I'm saying, man, every person deserves another chance. We're all sinners, Mannix. We're all freaking sinners. And especially in boxing, the way we grow up, you know, there's nothing good around us. And that's our outlet. That's our getaway. And you could tell that it was just a bad decision. He lost out on millions. He's on a little comeback against, you know, whatever fighters. I think it's a good fight. I like that fight. I didn't even think of Big Baby Miller. I was thinking just British. I was thinking of Dillian White or a former Tyson Fury opponent, like, you know, Wallach or something.
No, you
Wallin, I'm sorry.
Yeah, out of Wallin is fine. But Jarrell Miller, I think, would certainly sell better. And you get a chance to be the guy that takes the O off his resume, as you said, and... I think it's good. I think if Jarrell Miller can get one more win on his resume, then maybe early next year you could do Jarrell Miller against Joe Joyce, and it would give him another name for that resume.
And if you're playing matchmaker for Joyce and trying to be, you know, calculating, he's been pretty much inactive, you know, in 4 years. How many times has he fought?
Since 2018, I believe, was his last fight, his last big fight before the Joshua ban.
So there you go. Once a year, maybe, that he's fought against, you know,
well, no,
low level.
He had multiple years. Two years off. He came back, I believe, early this year to win those two fights, and now he's sort of on that comeback trail. On that subject of Miller, like, I do think he's paid a significant price. I would obviously never, ever advise anyone to get in the ring with him unless you're doing the most stringent drug testing in the history of boxing drug testing. But look, Jean Pascal is out there, and he's one win away from getting a chance to fight for the light heavyweight title. Like, he tested positive, what was it, a couple of years ago for three different banned substances, real banned substances as well. So if Jean Pascal is getting another shot, bite at the apple, Jarrell Miller probably should as well.
I agree, and that's why, you know, I'm not being extra hard on him. You can't just, you know, say he's done something he's been doing since he was a kid just because he had one mistake. Like I said, we're all human.
Oh, he had a few mistakes.
We're all human, man. Well, I'm not here to back him up. I know you're not.
But like, all I'm saying is that he got busted again a year after the AJ stuff. Again, I think he was going to fight Jerry Forrest in that fight. That he got busted again is wild.
All right, look. Like I said,
that's an addiction.
I'm giving you my opinion. I'm not saying the commission should do it, whatever. I'm giving you my opinion because I feel sorry for him as a fighter, because I know that he's invested so much time and effort to stay undefeated, to be relevant, to get the title shot, to finally start making some real serious money. And like a fucking idiot, you go and cheat. But then again, you start to think, how many years has he been cheating for? How long has he been doing it? Then it taints the entire resume and takes the name.
Oh, 100%.
You know, just like Lance Armstrong, you can't even talk about that name without just getting disgusted by steroids. You know, you'll never look at Lance Armstrong's accomplishments the same again. And that's what happens whenever you get caught. There's no going backwards. You're always known as a cheater.
All right, so let's stay in the heavyweight division. Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua was officially called off by Tyson Fury this week. Then it was back on, according to Tyson Fury. Now, I honestly don't know where it stands. Here's Eddie Hearn on Thursday discussing the state of Fury and Joshua.
A lot of what Tyson Fury says is not true. So just to give you the truth, when we agreed terms, we waited, say, 8 or 9 days for a contract to come through, which is okay. It's a big fight. The contract was all over the place. And all of last week, we spoke to Queensbury every day to try and get it in the right place. This Monday, just gone, we sent them a final version of the contract, and Tyson Fury came out and said, fight's off, I'm not fighting Anthony Joshua. Okay, so kind of like semi-down tools. Tuesday, George Warren came on and said, look, let me try and speak to him. Let's keep working away. We're like, okay. And then yesterday afternoon, George Warren said, here's our comments on your final version, which again is fine. This happens. I mean, this fight, we're here for the Conor Ben Eubank fight. I would say this fight, from the first draft of the contract, took 2.5 months to sign. So anyway, we haven't had the contract for 14 days, by the way. That's not true either. But again, last night at midnight, I spoke to George Warren and he said, look, let me speak to Tyson Fury, see if I can try and get him back in the fight. Didn't hear anything other than a post on Instagram today to say, sign a contract today, otherwise it's off again. So we've got the comments from Queensbury on a contract. We're going to go back on that today. It's 100% not getting signed today, as I told you. No one's asking us or putting pressure on us to sign the contract on these given days other than Tyson Fury's Instagram account.
So let me ask you this, Sergio. Is it important for the two sides here to make Fury Joshua right now?
Yes. Emphatic 100%. Yes. God, it has nuts. To happen, man. Because politics always gets in the way of a fight. Injuries get in the way of a fight. Promoters, money, networks, managers. So many hurdles you have to jump just to get a mega fight to happen. And nowadays, it seems like it's only going to happen when it's past their prime, a la Mayweather Pacquiao, where it happens. Yes, it would broke records. Yes, people loved it. They bought it. But then after the fight, it was like, ah, man, both these guys are too old. It's not happening in their prime. That's exactly where Spence and Crawford are going. They're headed in that direction as well. I mean, the biggest fights that we need, we don't get. We didn't get AJ. We didn't get AJ versus Fury. This is another big fight that almost got done. So many incredible fights that can happen, and they're just not happening. So, yes, I say get it done. I don't care. You know, whatever it takes, get it done. And I think Fury was doing that. I mean, as far as what he was promoting on social media, you know, 60-40, he sent him a contract. He said he wants to get it done. But, of course, we didn't get to see here Joshua's side. It's just embarrassing, man. It's boxing for you.
Well, here's why I disagree.
Disagree why?
I disagree that it needs to be made right now.
Oh.
I disagree because I think this fight can get exponentially bigger, and it can get exponentially bigger in a very short period of time. You make Fury versus AJ right now, and it is the biggest fight in British boxing history. You know, 80, 90,000 in a stadium somewhere. I guess Cardiff is the targeted site. You make tens of millions, maybe over $100 million in total revenue. It's a monster. But it's not quite as big as it could be a year from now when Anthony Joshua, hopefully, gets his career back on track. When Fury, hopefully, wins a fight against Alexander Usyk and becomes undisputed champion at heavyweight. I know that there is risk there because Joshua, his career could continue to slide. Fury, even though I think both of us would agree, is the favorite against Usyk, he could lose that fight and then we're out a potential mega fight. But I just see a light at the end of this Fury-Joshua tunnel that has this fight being huge, the biggest fight in boxing history if it gets made a year from now.
All I heard was hopefully. And you said it twice. Hopefully. Yeah, I don't want to rely on a mega fight on hopefully. It's yes or no. There's no maybes. There's no sure. There's no hopefully, Mannix. You got to make that stuff happen. Make it happen while you can make it happen. And it almost got close to happening, according to Fury. They sent the contract. It was 60-40, according to Fury. But we didn't get it, man. We did not get it. Now, whatever happens next, it's going to be hopefully, you know, where both of them win and we can get it back again, like you said, later next year. I don't rely on that, man. I rely on facts. I rely on, look, I'm going to have one more fight and I want to fight him. Nah, you know what? I don't want that other fight. I want to fight him next. That's it. Let's make it happen. There's no hoping here. Let's get it done. This is business. This is boxing business. There's two things. So I'm a boxer. I'm going to take care of my boxing and then I'm going to take care of my business. It was that close to getting done, I would think, but it's just bad. Bad. I say make the fight happen next. I don't want to rely on hopefully.
Yeah, but you look at Tyson Fury right now, and he's at the peak of his powers. He is the best heavyweight in the world by a significant amount, I would say. And he would go into that AJ fight peaking. Where is Anthony Joshua right now in your mind? You've watched the last two fights against Usyk. He looked sharper in the rematch against Usyk, but he still lost. And then he went out and had that meltdown in the ring afterwards. We don't know what the status is of Robert Garcia as his trainer. We don't know what the status is of Angel Fernandez as his trainer. Sergio, you've told me many times over the years that you need more than one fight to get used to a new trainer, that you need time to adjust to him. Like, I want to see Anthony Joshua fight, and I've said this before, the British, or like, not the British, he is British, Dave Allen or somebody like that over in the UK in December, January, go on and fight Dillian White in April or May, and then you get to September, October, and that's when you fight Tyson Fury. I don't look at AJ right now as being anything more than like 75, 80% of what he could be at this moment, whereas Fury is at his very best.
I like the comeback fight to get that confidence and that knockout.
Just, you know, clobber feeling again. Somebody.
Just kick the shit out of somebody. Absolutely. Yes.
How long has it been since he's done that?
It's been a while. Pavetkin.
No, but after Pavetkin. Pulev he knocked out.
So, I mean, he kind of struggled.
But he still knocked him out.
Yeah, he did. I don't think he looked at full capacity there. I think Pavetkin was the last time we've seen him, you know, firing on all cylinders. But I like that plan, and it has to do with a damaged ego and a damaged, you know, former champion. You get him that confidence back. Every power puncher from, you know, Foreman to, you know, Tommy Hearns, when they lost that first fight, you know, their first loss, it was by knockout. They had to get that feeling back again. And then once they started knocking out guys again, they won the title again. That's exactly what this man needs right now. He needs to feel on top of the world. He needs to hear the words, you know, and the winner, Anthony Joshua, hands up in the air, the roar of the crowd. That's addicting, Mannix. That's addicting. And once that winning feeling comes back, it's something you've felt all your life. And then you can go into another big fight. All you need to do is have a good, solid
win.
Wait,
so are you agreeing with me then?
Yes, I am.
But you just did a 180 on this.
I wouldn't go as far as to say David Allen.
No, but you. So you would, if you were AJ, you would put off the Fury fight then?
No.
This is what we're talking about, though.
I know that's what we're talking about.
Do Fury now.
It's not happening now.
It might.
From what they're posting on social
media. Yeah, but Fury changes
his
mind. By the time people listen to this podcast on Friday, Fury might have changed his mind three times already. Like, it keeps... the goalposts keep moving with Tyson Fury.
All right. I say take the Fury fight. If that fight doesn't happen, then yes, your plan works well, but not a David Allen. Someone with more name recognition and someone that people can at least recognize.
Well, you want to see him kill Chisora out there? Aren't they like management buddies now? Doesn't AJ manage Derek Chisora, I think? 258 management?
Well, I mean, it could be someone along those lines.
I don't want to see that.
Along those lines. I didn't say Chisora, but along those lines.
All right, we got to move on. Let's talk about Demetrius Andrade.
Oh!
Exactly. The now former middleweight champion is a man without a fight after Andrade elected to withdraw from an interim title fight, interim 168-pound title fight, I should say, against Zach Parker. The reason was financial. When Frank Warren, who promotes Zach Parker, initially won the purse bid for Andrade Parker back in the spring, it was for $1.8 million. Andrade had to withdraw from that fight because of an injury. A new purse bid was ordered, which resulted in Warren winning for just $305,000, which is a significant cut for Demetrius. Andrade decided that was not enough money to go ahead with that fight. But now Andrade is 34 and faced with being out of the ring for more than a year. Sergio, where does Demetrius Andrade, our friend, go from here?
Well, I'll tell you where he goes, because I've been there before. Whenever you've been getting paid really, really well, and been a champion and been in the limelight, and then you have that hiccup, and he hasn't even lost and it's a hiccup, but you can't get the big fights anymore. The phone stops ringing. You're not a sought out, you know, a commodity. You're not hot anymore. You have to take a dangerous fight. You have to take a high risk, low reward type fight to get respect. And now the shoe's on the other foot, Mannix. That's the reason people didn't want to fight Demetrius Andrade. He was too much of a high risk, low reward. Now Andrade's on the other side of that. That's what he needs to do. He needs to go beat a fighter like a, I would think, like a Janibek, Aleem Khanouli, scary Kazakhstan, another southpaw. He'll get respect doing that. Someone that no one wants to face right now. Someone along those lines, because Charlo's not going to fight him. Canelo's certainly not going to fight him. He's not going to get a marquee name. But get a scary little, you know, unknown like that and wipe the floor with him or win convincingly. That's how you turn heads. So that's what Andre needs to do if he wants to get back to those seven-figure paydays that he got accustomed to. You know, he has to take a high-risk, low-reward type fight.
I agree. I don't think that fight is Janibek. I think that fight is David Benavidez. And there's been some...
Wait a minute. Benavidez is a champion. That's a champion,
he's
former champion.
Not a champion, though.
That's a name recognition. What are you talking about?
He's
two-time
champion.
Champion.
He's not
undefeated.
A
no one's
he's
ever
not
beat
a champion
him.
Right now.
No one's ever beat him.
Who is the champion at 168? It's
Canelo.
All
he
four
has
belts.
All of them, yeah.
Yes, Benavidez has the secondary title for the WBC. There's been some industry chatter.
Benavidez is a champ. I don't care what you
fine.
Say.
He's lost it twice. Once on the scales and once because of a recreational
no one's beat
drug.
Him.
This is a dumb part of the argument. Benavidez is the ideal opponent for Andrade.
La bandera roja.
Okay, but Andrade needs to find a way to align himself with Al Haymon. He has to. He has to go over to the PBC side. It's the only way for him to get a significant fight. Eddie Hearn tried for 3 years to make a big fight for Demetrius Andrade. Andrade made a lot of money. It didn't work. Top Rank, they would have done a deal for Andrade to fight Janibek, but they have nobody else out there for him, and he's not going to fight... Like, Edgar Berlanga is not going to fight him, that's for sure. Where the action is for Demetrius Andrade is with the PBC. And it's going to have to start with David Benavidez. That's an incredibly dangerous fight for Andrade, who would be making his debut at 168 pounds. But if he beats Benavidez, all of a sudden, he's in position to fight Caleb Plant, to fight Jermall Charlo, to maybe get in the mix, to fight Canelo if he's able to beat someone like Benavidez. I think that's the only option right now, Sergio. Like, whatever money Al Haymon is offering Demetrius Andrade, if he's offering anything at all, he has to take it. He has to find a way to get in the ring with David Benavidez.
All roads, Mannix. All roads, when the doors are shut in your face, lead to Al Haymon.
You would know.
I would know because they shut every single door at me when I went to Al Haymon, and I made a lot of money towards the end of my career. So I think I love that idea. Demetrius Andrade should sign with Al Haymon. That man will get you paid like you're accustomed to, and he will put you in front of the big names. It might take one or two fights, but he'll put you in front of those champions. That I love that idea.
Well, I mean, Andrade passed on the chance to fight or to be part of the Showtime Al Haymon network, you know, about 2 years ago. If there's an offer for him now, he's got to take it. Because, I mean, Sergio, at 34 years old, can you believe this? As talented as Andrade is, and he's incredibly talented, we both agree on that, he has never fought a former world champion. In his entire career, he's never fought a world champion or a former world champion. He won his title at 154 as a vacant belt, beating Vonis Matarosyan, and he won his title at 160, as we know, against Walter Cowton Dacqua. Now, he's had some bad luck along the way. Was supposed to fight Billy Joe Saunders back in 2018. That didn't happen, but he will have one of the thinnest resumes of any two-time world champion or two-division world champion I've ever heard of at this point.
Yeah, you know what? Now that you mentioned that, I'm thinking about, wow, he did pick up, you know, vacant titles.
Yeah.
You know, that's a title holder. That's a two-division title holder. I never heard that expression before. That's a two-division title holder because, you know, the way I think of it, you need to beat a champion to become a champion. If you pick up a vacant strap, that makes you a title holder. No shame there. You're still a title holder. You hold the belt. I never saw it that way because I think the world of Andrade, ever since, you know, he made the Olympics, represented U.S., you know, I think he's one of these avoided, you know, scary fighters that no one wants to face. Eddie's Landi, Lara... you know, type, you know, talent like that. But yeah, he hasn't fought a champion. That's incredible. It blows my mind because he's that avoided.
Yeah. I mean, he has, avoided is the right word. He has been avoided at 154. He was avoided at 160. To not be avoided at 168, he's got to step in the lion's den right away. His first fight's got to be against David Benavidez. I think that's possible too. I've heard some chatter about that maybe happening before the end of the year. I think Benavidez's side wants it. Benavidez doesn't duck any smoke. He wants all the smoke.
I was about to tell you that without saying the word smoke, and please don't ever use the word smoke again. It just doesn't sound cool coming out of your mouth.
Does it sound cool coming
but he wants all the fire. He wants
what the hell is the difference?
He wants he wants the hardest challenges, and I get it, man. And a guy like Benavidez, he doesn't turn down anybody. A guy like Caleb Plant will be calculated, be like, no, let him beat somebody. Who else is at 168? Darrell.
Let Caleb Plant beat somebody first. How about that? It's Caleb Plant.
Yeah,
beating.
but Canelo, but he has Canelo on his resume. And that's it.
That's like the Rolly Romero argument. Yeah, he's got Canelo on his resume. Yeah. He got knocked out.
And now look at Rolly Romero. He has a name. He has a recognition.
And no fights.
You see him around fights. People want to take pictures of him. He carries himself with that bad boy swag. Doesn't matter. People know him by now. And people know
that's what matters. Doesn't winning matter?
Of course, winning matters, but also getting big fights because you're known. You have name recognition. You're not a nobody anymore. So you think
you're
about,
known for getting knocked out.
It doesn't matter. People know the name Rolly Romero and Caleb Plant because of who they fought. That's that. That's that. So now they have a little weight on their name. Then let them cash out on
this
that.
This is the state of boxing in a nutshell. You are known and you are considered a success because you got knocked out by a high level opponent. That is absurd in every possible way.
That's what happens, man. I mean, just because you kill Jesse James doesn't make you Jesse James.
Thank you. Yes. I remember. I saw the movie. Yes. I got it. I don't want to make this about Rolly Romero, though, but like the problem with what you're talking about with Rolly Romero and to a lesser degree Caleb Plant is like they think who they got in the ring with and lost to entitles them to something big. Like Rolly Romero could have gotten a fight by now. Chances are, though, he's not going to fight the rest of this year and may not fight till the middle of next year because he thinks he's worthy of Errol Spence or he thinks he's worthy of Ryan Garcia, somebody like that.
That's ridiculous.
Of course it is. But you put him in with like, you know, Errol Spence wants him to fight Frank Martin, his guy, the 135-pounder. Rolly Romero's not going to do that because Frank Martin probably beats him.
That and Romero already has recognition where he can bring that name value and get a bigger fight.
He's the Derek Chisora of... No, but Derek Chisora these fights.
Derek Chisora fights. He's war. Fights.
I don't want to say that about Derek Chisora. He's not like that.
No, Romero's like a Ricardo Mayorga. He's like a Mayorga. He talks the talk and he has a big punch and people love that.
Mayorga at least was fighting guys too, though.
Well, he became a champion. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's a little bit different there. All right. Let's talk about Floyd Mayweather. The Floyd Mayweather exhibition tour continued last week with Mayweather knocking out Makiru Asakara, a Japanese MMA star who is well-known on that side of the world. Up next for Floyd is a November exhibition against Deji, the younger brother of influencer KSI. But then, Sergio, things could get interesting. Jake Paul has called for a fight against Mayweather. When asked about fighting Jake Paul, Mayweather said this.
He said, I'm only doing real fights. And of course, I can't get up high in weight, but I'll fight him in a real fight at the weight that I'm at. But as of right now, for what he's doing, it's good for what he's doing. But once he fights a real fighter, it's going to be bad.
So last this, Sergio, do you like a fight between Floyd Mayweather and Jake Paul?
Of course I do. And I'm going to explain why. Because Floyd Mayweather, like you said, is on the Victory Tour, the Celebrity Tour, the non-boxing tour, and this guy, this man, this legend, this one of the greats of our generation, Money Mayweather, deserves it nowadays. He spent his entire life, his entire career, dedicated to become as great as he was, 50-0, you know, numerous world champions, made all the money in the world. Now it's time for him to just rob the bank, the heist, you know, go on this little tour, kick the hell out of MMA fighters, kick the hell out of, you know, Conor McGregor's and break pay-per-view records, kickboxers, whatever. You can fight whoever he wants. And now, if he wants to fight another YouTube celebrity, he already beat Logan Paul. Yeah, whoop the hell out of his brother. It'll be a great thing. I think he'll do well.
Okay, you have to differentiate between the collection of guys like Deji and...
Who
I just mentioned. The YouTuber he's going to fight next. The two Japanese fighters he fought in the last year. They're in one category. Jake Paul's in another.
Really?
Jake, he's better than those guys, is what I'm saying. And that makes him more dangerous to Floyd Mayweather. Sergio, you watched Floyd against Logan Paul. It was ugly, but you know, Logan Paul was using his size to kind of push Mayweather around a little bit during that fight. I don't know who won it. I wasn't scoring it. I was cringing during most of it. But he went the full, what, 8-round distance against Floyd Mayweather. And Jake Paul is a better boxer than Logan Paul. Jake Paul actually has real knockout power. Now, I'm skeptical that fight would ever happen because Jake Paul's walking around at 185, 190 pounds. Floyd, what is he, like around 160 at this point, maybe a little lower, 154. I don't see Jake Paul getting down that low in weight for a fight like that. I don't see Floyd going up that further. But I unless the money is astronomically high, why would you get into the ring with someone who is a developing boxer who has real power? Why would you do it, Sergio? Like, if you can make low seven figures to fight these absolute walkovers, like the guy he fought in his last fight and the guy he's going to fight in his next fight, why would you risk it? Why would you risk having your entire legacy forgotten, which it would be, and you know it, it would be forgotten if you get starched from one punch from Jake Paul?
The full disclosure, Mannix, does Jake Paul sponsor your show?
He does not.
Why are you so infatuated with Jake Paul? Why are we talking about Jake Paul?
Because Floyd Mayweather said he would fight him. That's why we're talking about
him. Why are you praising his power like he's Rocky Marciano or somebody? He's been knocking out.
Do you think he has power?
He's a strong kid, but I don't think he has power. He's knocking out non-boxers. You know how many non-boxers I knocked out in the hood? I mean, that's just basically what he's doing. He's knocking out guys because he's a strong, athletic kid. Him and his brother are strong, athletic, you know, former football players, wrestlers. These guys are strong. They, you know, yeah, anyone could punch hard with if you don't know how to duck. Floyd Mayweather is a defensive genius. Most boxers know how to defend themselves, roll from a shot. These guys, what makes them good is that they're strong. What's going to make them suck when they fight a real pro fighter is that they can't take a punch. That's the main thing. Once they get hit, they're going to turn their back and quiver, or they're going to go down. They're not going to know how to react. That's where the difference is going to be, Mannix. That's where the difference is going to be. Not whether they could punch out, like you're so like in love with the power. It's whether they could take a damn punch. It's not going to take a big punch. That's why Floyd Mayweather is so comfortable. 160 pounds against 190 pounds. If he hits him dead in the chin, it's not going to matter. They don't know how to take a punch. These guys do not know how to take a punch.
Okay, so why did Logan Paul go the distance then?
Because he had 40 pounds on him. He had 40 pounds on Floyd Mayweather. So size obviously is going to matter when it comes to certain. Not only that, he had height. He had everything on him.
Jake will have some height on him. Jake will probably have some weight on him if he rehydrated pretty high up.
Okay, I'm not saying Jake won't go some rounds. I mean, Jake will go some rounds.
Look, Floyd was never a knockout puncher in his best days. Like, he wasn't. Like, I take it back. His best days were probably before De La Hoya. He was really good as a knockout puncher at that weight. But since he got to 147 and above, he was not a knockout puncher. He's not going to knock out Jake Paul. It's just not going to happen. And I'd be concerned that he just gets caught. That at 45 years old, his reflexes aren't quite what they used to be, and he just gets caught with a big punch, which all of a sudden makes that, like, the first line is Wikipedia page. Like, it becomes, you know, a part of his narrative. He doesn't need that. He accomplished way too much in the sport of boxing to put himself in that position. The bottom line for me, Sergio, is I would, if I was advising Floyd and he's got smart people around him, I would say, don't go anywhere near Jake Paul. It makes no sense for you to do that.
You're insane. He's laughing all the way to the bank, and that's the reason he comes out with that mask, that robber's mask, you know, because it's a heist. Every time he goes into one of these you know, non-boxing fights, it's a heist. He leaves all the way laughing all the way to the bank, and this is another case of that. So, yeah, I'm all for Money Mayweather whooping the hell out of another Paul brother.
I'll give it to Floyd, a great businessman in his active days and a great businessman in retirement. Like, I watched the replay of that fight against Asakura. The guy had no chance. And look, Deji is going to get clobbered in that fight in the Middle East. Like, just going to get beat up. And Floyd is going to cash a seven-figure paycheck to go and do it. Like, thanks for coming. Way to work up a sweat. Way to knock some nobody out. And here's well over $1 million.
He's not a businessman. He's a businessman. So let him handle his business. Damn.
Who are you trying to sound like there?
That's a Jay-Z line. You wouldn't know.
You don't sound like Jay-Z delivering it, though.
Well, it's out of context.
All right. Let's talk about Ryan Garcia and Tank Davis. While we wait for Ryan versus Tank in the ring, the two of them may not be all that willing to wait for a fight outside of the ring. Garcia was on social media this week detailing a near altercation he had with Tank at a Los Angeles nightclub. Sergio, negotiations, I'm told, are still ongoing for Garcia versus Tank, either in December or January of next year. I'll put the question this way. Who needs that fight to happen more, Ryan Garcia or Tank Davis?
They both do, equally. Equally, Mannix. And I hate the fact that I'm, you know, I'm not choosing a side, and you know, you don't like me when I ride the border like that, but they both do. Tank is damn near 28 years old, and he hasn't faced a legitimate scary champion. He's faced Gamboa, a guy that was past his prime. Santa Cruz, someone that was much smaller. He has not faced anyone that's on his level. And when he did, an Isak Cruz, which was not a championship-type fight, you know, he wasn't a champion, he gave him hell. He gave him hell. So that's Tank Davis. And Ryan Garcia, on the other hand, they're moving him really nicely, but he's only, what, 24 years old? You know, he's 4 years younger than Tank. So he's fine. But, you know, a lot of people do think that he just calls out guys because they know that they're not gonna take the fight. So I would love for one of these champions that Ryan Garcia calls out on social media, and he has a lot of followers, to finally say, you know what? All right, kid, I'm sending you the contract. Because then, you know, that's when you know if he's for real. I know Ryan Garcia's for real. I seen it from my own eyes when he got off the canvas with Luke Campbell. Mm-hmm. I said it. We're going to see what this kid's made of. Because I was in doubt. I didn't know what he had. You don't know how you're going to react when you get clipped like that for the first time, dropped and hurt by a real fighter, a guy like Luke Campbell. He got up and closed the show like a champ. He had that look in his eye, the eye of the tiger. So I believe in Ryan Garcia. So who needs this fight? They both do. And it's aside from a Joshua Fury or Canelo, whoever else, it's the biggest fight in the boxing.
It's up there. Bigger than Crawford Spence, at least commercially, for sure. Yeah. I understand why you say Ryan Garcia needs that fight, but come on. Gervonta Davis needs it a lot more. Gervonta Davis is going to be 28 years old in November, and to your point, has not fought anyone really consider high level at this point. His biggest win came back when he was at 130 pounds against Jose Benavidez. Like, that's, come on, let's be real with this. If Gervonta Davis fights, I don't even know who he would fight. We have this conversation all the time. I don't know who's there at 130 or 135 or even 140 in the PBC universe that makes any sense. Like, could he drop back to 130 to fight Hector Luis Garcia for his title? I guess that would be a credible fight for him, but he's not going to go back to 130. And Garcia doesn't have the same kind of credibility at 135. Look, even the most staunchest of Tank's supporters, guys like Akin Barak, who we work with on DAZN, have said to me, like, if he doesn't take a real fight in his next fight, you know, we're going to start to turn on him as well. Like, whoa. You know, even the biggest advocates for Tank are saying now he needs a big fight.
About time. We've been saying it for 2 years now. Well, you've been saying it for 2 years.
I've been saying it for 2 years.
I kind of been, maybe a year and a half, a year for me.
About a year, yeah.
I kind of got.
But he needs it, man. Like, he can't.
Yes, he does. I'm with you.
And he's got to be the one that goes to Al Haymon and goes to Leonard Ellerbe and the people that are responsible for charting the course of his career and say, make the fight. Now, he has done that with Ryan Garcia. Like I said, I've talked to people during this week. Like, there are still talks going on for Garcia against Davis. I don't know how. I don't know if it gets done because it is a complicated fight to make, and I never believe fights like that are going to happen, but they are talking about doing it. But if you're Garcia and if you're Tank, specifically Tank, you got to make this fight happen. You got to ram this fight through and get it to the finish line, because you need Ryan Garcia more than Ryan Garcia needs you. If Ryan Garcia doesn't get Tank, he stays at 140. He starts to move his career forward at 140 pounds. There are fights there for him. He'd probably get a shot, Sergio, at a vacant title or one of those. Like Prograis versus Zepeda is happening. Hold on. Prograis versus Zepeda is happening, I think, in November. Like, Garcia would get an opportunity to fight the winner of that fight, I believe. Or some other of those 140-pound titles that have broken off now that Josh Taylor's given a bunch of them up. So I think Garcia has a path forward that is credible. I don't know what the path forward is for Tank if he's going to continue to avoid these types of big fights.
Garcia's the most marketable fight as far as, you know, the higher numbers and pay-per-view and all that, but the fight that will be more interesting, in my opinion, at 140 is a fight between Tank and Teofimo Lopez. Could you imagine that fight, the buildup? That can be in the Barclays or anywhere in New York or in the East Coast. It'll do big. That's a pay-per-view fight as well. It'll be a different crowd. You'll have Ryan Garcia with all the 16-year-old girls and social media, you know, celebrities. And when it comes to Tank and Teofimo, that'll be the hardcore. That'll be East Coast. That'll be the urban crowd. That'll be boxing diehards. That'll be a hell of a fight.
Let me give you a different...
That'll be a hell of a fight.
It's a great fight. Don't get me wrong. Let me give you a different pathway I would like to see Tank take. I would like to see him find a way to get the Ryan Garcia fight done. If he gets that fight done, you know who I want to see him fight after that? Shakur Stevenson. Moving up to 135 pounds. Why?
Because Shakur Stevenson is one of these guys you don't want to fight.
Oh, God. Here we go. So you avoid him
like the plague.
Of course you would.
Shakur is that good.
Okay, then. But if you're a top dog at 135, Shakur is a top dog at 135, why would you take that fight? And after Shakur, if you could find a way to win that fight, Devin Haney's going to be out there. I would go chase Devin Haney and the Undisputed Championship at 135.
There you go. That makes more sense. Devin Haney's been clipped. We know how he reacts. You know, we've seen him rocked by Linares. Tank is a bigger puncher than Linares. He's more explosive, and he's a naturally bigger fighter. So, at this point, if Tank's not fighting Garcia, there's plenty
of... You're a fighter. How much does you put on the fighter? Like, we're sitting here talking about what a great pathway it is to fight those three guys. You make a ton of money. But you make a ton of money doing those fights. Those are pay-per-view, big-time fights.
You answered your own question. The money. That's why. The fact that
this networks
kid,
and promoters...
No, listen to me, man. You ask me. You're giving my opinion.
Tell me what it
Look,
is.
Man, we grow up from nothing. I came from East L.A. Tank Davis from Baltimore. We had nothing. The gangs, the drugs. When you start making seven figures a fight, when you start making that kind of money, when you go from insufficient funds to seven figures, and he's making a lot more than I ever did, come on, man. Whatever you're doing, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And guess what? It's not broken. Mayweather Promotions is moving them well. They're all, you know, getting some money off that pot. Why? It ain't broke, don't fix.
Okay, but you then can't sit there, and your promoters can't sit there and say Tank should be on the pound for pound list.
And
Tank
that's is one of the why best me and you never include him in that pound for pound list. That's what
some
me
people
and you,
do, which is crazy.
That's why me and you give Ak and Barak so much shit, because we know that, you know, they just don't call it like it is. They're not calling a spade a spade. I'm with you on that, and I'm a big fan of Tank. I love watching him fight. I order his pay per views because I'm a fan. But I agree with you. Thin resume at this point, almost 28 years old, and you don't have a solid undefeated championship name on your resume since Jose Pedraza? Nah, man. You deserve all the criticism.
All right, a couple questions I want to take from Instagram before we go. Marcos asks, are you starting to get worried about Errol Spence versus Terrence Crawford? Sergio, we have, like, credit good reporters. People I know and respect have... like, over the course of the last month and a half, have written, like, this fight is so close several times. I'll tell you what I, you know, have heard about this, that there's still a lot of optimism it gets done for November 19th. There still are details in this fight contract that they're slogging through, but they still believe it's going to get done. But Sergio, 6 weeks. 6 weeks away. At some point, we're going to have to stop saying, well, it's okay. You don't have to promote the fight. You don't need that much time to promote the fight. Well, I mean, what is the mark, right? Is it 6 weeks? Is it 5 weeks? Is it 4 weeks? When do we start to panic about this fight happening?
I gave up on that fight.
I wouldn't give up on it.
I gave up on that fight because you need 8 weeks in camp. 8 weeks in camp for that fight.
No, I think, but you know this as a fighter. You're already in camp. They're already in camp.
Hold on. Yeah, okay.
Spence and Crawford are in camp.
They're in camp. Okay, the marketing machine needs a good 5 weeks.
Yeah.
A good 5 weeks of solid pumping that, you know, commercials and billboards and all that. So yeah, you need a good 5 weeks to really make it a big event like that. But these guys, I mean, they're the best of the best, and they're not really talking about fighting each other. They don't talk about each other's names. They're not marketing it well. I mean, it's gonna be another version of Mayweather Pacquiao, where that fight finally happened. It's gonna do great, but something's gonna be missing. One of them, something's gonna be missing. The inactivity is gonna kick in for one of them. An injury or something's gonna pop up. It's not gonna be the same. Or maybe one guy got older, you know, overnight. It's gonna be one of those fights where it just happened a little bit too late, man, and it wasn't the same. That the taste already went bitter in my mouth for that fight. even if it does happen at the end of this year, it's kind of just like
you would. If it happens to the end of this year,
if it happens in December,
November. November 19th is still the target date.
It's Christmas time. December, I'm thinking about Christmas, man.
Okay, but November 19th, you're not. All right, you're not a big Thanksgiving guy, so relax. So you're thinking about you'd be interested. You'd want to see that fight in mid-November. I would too. I still believe. I'm just putting it out there. I still believe that fight will happen in November 19th. And you've done this, Sergio. I agree with the marketing part. I think, like, let's say this fight is going to land on Showtime pay-per-view, which is most likely in this scenario. By not having it signed and sealed, you've blown like 4 weeks of college football advertising on CBS to promote this fight and get people interested in remember this fight. Now, some people might say it doesn't really matter until like the week of the fight, 2 weeks before the week of the fight. I disagree. I think you want to get it on people's brains sooner rather than later. But I still think there's enough time for this fight to happen and be worth the wait that we put into it.
Chances are it's not going to happen. These guys,
I think chances are it is going to happen.
Because these guys need to be on talk shows. They need to be commercials.
Boxing has given up on mainstream media. It drives me crazy, but it has.
Not for mega fights like that. Sure it has. Not for mega fights like that.
Of course it has. The last, were Canelo and Golovkin on, talk shows or doing things like that? That wasn't mainstream.
Maybe for the first two fights they were.
The first two fights, but not for this one. But
they already had name recognition. Right, they already fought, and people already knew that 24 rounds have been raised.
I'm telling you, one of the things that irritates me the most about boxing promoting is that I think promoters have given up on mainstream media. I think that, you saw what impact mainstream media had on Taylor Serrano. Like, Taylor Serrano was on Good Morning America. The week of the fight, they're on friggin' Good Morning America. They're doing all this mainstream media. New York Times, Washington Post, hell, I'll give myself a pop. Sports Illustrated did a big spread on the two women. Like, that matters to get casual fans interested.
Yes, it matters. Why do you think I'm here talking to you? I spent 16 weeks on national television, on NBC, prime time.
That's correct.
So, yes, that matters. Main Street matters because mom and pops need to want to see you instead of just the boxing aficionados. That's when you become a crossover star, when people that don't watch boxing are watching boxing events. And fights like that will capture the imagination of non-boxers. And if it's not happening, then it's just another one that's blown in the wind.
It's too bad. I think they should do, promoters should do more. I think actually Top Rank does a pretty good job with mainstream media, at least trying to tap into it to a degree. But for the most part, it just seems like in boxing, we're satisfied with just going after the people in our bubble. And that's fine to a certain degree. You want to appeal to the hardcore fans that have helped get you here, but you're not going to grow the sport unless you're bringing casual fans in and making them real fans as well. Last question for you. I had a couple of questions on this. Alexander Vostick, do you see this? Is planning a comeback. The former light heavyweight champion used to train under Teddy Atlas. He lost kind of brutally to Archer Beterbiev. Got beat up at the end of that fight.
I
was there. And he retired a few years ago.
I was wondering why he retired.
Well, I mean, I think that was a pretty good beating he took from Beterbiev.
Yeah, but it was one.
I know.
And he was a champion already.
Do you think that Vostick has a future in the light heavyweight division?
Absolutely. That was a confusing retirement there. It reminded me of a Dmitry Pirog. And Pirog retired undefeated.
It's a good name.
Undefeated. That's exactly what it reminded me of. Just one beating at the top of the list. Both of you guys were champions to unify. You come up short, beating, okay, but it's your first, and then you retire. That blew my mind. And I'm not accustomed to that because boxers get to that point, and that's when they start making real money, to leave all that money on the table. When you made all that effort to become a champion and build your name, it just doesn't make sense. So, of course, I think Vostick should come back and left off where he left off at.
And Vostick was the guy who knocked out Adonis Stevenson, took his title off him back in 2018, and then lost that fight two fights later to Archer Beterbiev. 35 years old, so there's a bit of a shelf life on him, but he's a good enough boxer that I think he can get back to the mix if he takes two or three fights. I'm curious to see which promoter, if any, shows interest in him. You can certainly see Matchroom. Yeah, I can see Matchroom. You've got Joshua Buatsi out there with Matchroom. You've got Bivol still in the stable. That makes a lot of sense for Vostick if he decides to come back. Your comeback, we'll wait to hear about for a few weeks. It's going to happen. You know it's going to happen.
Hey, listen, man, I've been
in the gym. You're hitting the bag at LA Fitness.
I've been in the gym for 7 weeks, and it's getting good to me, Mannix. I'm telling you right now.
You're coming back.
I better not get a call from one of these geeks in celebrity town and celebrity YouTubers, because I'll beat the hell out of any of these guys that calls my name out. You hear me, Jake Paul?
When we come back, my conversation with Sebastian Fundura.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
L-A-S-I-K, LASIK.com.
All right, football season is underway, so now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook, because right now, new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's free bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just sign up with the promo code BOXING. I have been doing a lot of football gambling over the last few weeks. The Patriots have not been kind to me. Mac Jones has not been kind to me, but I'm banking big on Brian Hoyer this weekend, baby. That's right. Patriots legend Brian Hoyer. FanDuel has a ton of betting options for each game. You can combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the same game parlay. With live betting, you'll get updated odds on games that have already started. And with FanDuel's new live SGPs, you can create one even after kickoff. The app is safe, secure, and super easy to use. Get paid, get your winnings really fast. So sign up today with promo code BOXING for your no sweat first bet. If you bet on boxing with me, bet on the NFL with me with FanDuel. Make every moment more this season with FanDuel, the official sportsbook partner of the NFL. All right, Sebastian Fundura is here, undefeated junior middleweight contender. On October 8th, he will be back facing former title challenger Carlos Ocampo in Southern California. That's a fight you can see on Showtime. And the Towering Inferno joins me on the show. First of all, one of the best nicknames in all of boxing, I think. Like, tell me about where the nickname came from.
My nickname came from a movie, but it came from the idea of my promoter, Samson Lichtquist.
What did you think when he branded you that?
I didn't really care for it. I was like, whatever. It's kind of making fun of me. But, you know, later on in my career, I figured out it did fit well because, you know, the Towering because of the height and the Inferno because of the way we fight.
You thought that was like making fun of you in a way?
A little bit. Samson likes to joke a lot. So, yeah, I took it as an offense.
He does like to joke a lot. That's for sure. All right. Scale of 1 to 10, 1 being incredibly easy, 10 being the hardest thing you have ever done. How difficult is it for you to make weight for every fight?
1. It's a 1.
That's a 1. That's incredible.
I walk at this weight, it's not a problem.
That's wild, man. You're 6'6" and you're making 154 at a level of one? That easy?
That easy. It's fairly easy. All I have to do is do a workout. I'm fine. I'll be solid on my weight.
So like, you know, a week or so before your fight, how close are you to 154?
Probably walking at like 160 right now, 4 pounds off, 6 pounds off, five maybe.
If you had to squeeze down to welterweight again, could you do it?
Of course. But right now, I want to take my chance and win a belt at 154 because that's how I've been doing my whole career. Mm-hmm.
Does it surprise you that it's that easy? I mean, for some athletes, it's incredibly easy, right? Like I work with Sergio Mora, who tells me all the time, like, I can't keep weight on. I've been retired for 5 years. I'm like at 175 right now. Does it surprise you at all how easy it is to get down to that 154?
I think it's just the metabolism, you know, and then the training on top of that, you know, we're always sweating, but our metabolisms are probably really fast. So that's probably why.
So how much do you pay attention to your eating habits, you know, during a training camp?
I eat healthy. I do eat healthy. But, I mean, if I can, I'm going to sneak in a couple of cheeseburgers, you know, if I can, of course. But, like, getting close to the date, to the fight day, I'm eating more healthy and respecting my diet. I don't have a bad diet, but, again, it's more strict.
So the Friday before a weigh-in, like, how are you feeling before? Are you eating the night before? Are you eating that morning? How are you? What are you doing before the weigh-in?
Of course, yeah. We'll eat dinner the night before, but maybe cut that breakfast because, you know, the breakfast is so close to the weigh-in. But other than that, we'll be eating the whole day until the weigh-in.
Anyone that's ever tried to lose weight in their life hates you right now listening to this.
Yeah. Everybody's always asking me, how are you feeling, champ? You're hungry, huh? You're hungry. No, I'm fine. I'm smiling always. So it's, I'm fine.
I mean, you must look across at fighters during the weigh-ins, you know, guys that are smaller than you, and you can probably tell when they're dry, when they've been kind of starving themselves down.
Definitely. You could tell a boxer's hungry when he has that hoodie on, his head down, or has the headphones on, and you, or the sunglasses as well, you know, they don't want to be talked to.
So I did ask you about welterweight. Like, what's the lowest weight you think you could possibly get to without killing yourself?
I think welterweight. You know, I would never want to squeeze anything lower than that. You know, that's I feel like I welterweight will be squeezing a little bit, and in my theory that's unhealthy. You know.
Yeah. Did you watch Paul Williams coming up? You know, another guy that was a really, really tall welter in 154.
Unfortunately, the only fight I've seen against with him is when he fought Martinez.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah. I mean, who hasn't seen that one? Yeah. Who hasn't seen that one?
You got to go back and watch the Margarito one, Sebastian. That was the great Paul Williams, when Margarito was so scary and Paul Williams went out there and just dominated him from start to finish. The Martinez one, I was at that one in Atlantic City. That didn't go so well for Paul.
Definitely not.
Paul that night. So you're 24 years old now. When did your kind of first growth spurt really start?
I think 13. I was like 5'5", 5'6", and then all of a sudden I grew up to like six feet.
Were you an athlete at that point? I mean, I know your parents were boxers. It runs in the family, but were you playing other sports around then?
No, only boxing. I was only doing boxing this whole time. So it was cool. It was pretty cool taller than everybody else, taller than the teachers already. So, you know, when I would get in trouble, they would probably look up to me and nag me from that way.
But you must have had a basketball coach come up to you and be like, let's go, let's play.
Of course. Every school I went to, middle school, high school, they always told me. So, but, you know, I never really cared for the sport. So,
you know, so you never even wanted to try it, never even wanted to go in that direction?
Nah, not really. No, I can't even dribble basketball.
So what was it about boxing then? I mean, was it just that your father did it, your mother did it, obviously your siblings are involved in it. Was it just that it's the family business?
Well, I saw that they're having fun with it. They're having fun with it. And I was like, well, I want to try. I want to do something fun as well. So it's that's how it all started, you know, watching them do it, wanting to be like them. And you look up to them, you want to be like them as well. So that's what came from it, you know. And then I started enjoying myself. I started winning, you know. I like 13, 14, I already knew I wanted to do it as a career. And but we just continued to do it. And this is what came out of it.
How good were your parents in the boxing ranks?
Well, my mother only competed amateur. Hmm. She had a couple fights amateur. She won every fight, though, I'll tell you that. And then my father, he got to the professionals. But then he had my son, my older brother, so that's I think derailed a little bit his career. But he was also very talented, from what I remember.
What your mother must love the way women's boxing's taking off now.
Yeah, well, I think that's only because of my sister. So my sister's the new generation of female fighters that are starting young as well, and not saying taking the sport seriously, but like they really want to push the female agenda of boxing and let them fight on these bigger outfits and make more names for themselves, you know.
So did your parents want you to be in boxing? Because a lot of boxers don't want their kids to be involved because they know how hard it is, hard that road is to get to the top.
No, I don't think they ever had a problem with that. You know, it's like a family affair. Everybody doing it. Why not do it yourself? You know, why not try it out? They're more of like, try it out. If you like it, if you don't like it, you know, it's up to you. Mm-hmm.
The you mentioned, like you said, you're around 13 and 0 at that point, or 13 years old, 4 and 0, whatever. When did you start to realize?
13, 14. Yeah, I was 13 years old when I realized I want to become professional. Well, at 13, hold on, you're like five. I had 5 years into boxing already. Mm-hmm. And We're doing good, and we're getting better. We were always improving with every year. And I was like, well, if this continues, you know, why not make some money out of it? You know, it's something I love already, you know? So it's like when you're a little kid and say you love dinosaurs or whatever, you want to be a paleontologist later on because it's like, hey, I love this and I'm going to get paid for it. Why not?
Did something happen? Win a tournament that gave you that kind of confidence boost? Was it a string of wins? What was it that kind of triggered that feeling in you that you could do this, you know, full time?
Yeah, just like a string of wins, probably continuing to win, continuing to get better. We're getting stronger. We're getting taller, all these things, all these nice little advantages that we're getting to as well. So it's just, I know we had a lot of fans in the amateurs as well. So it's like to bring it to professionals, like this is probably going to be not that it's easy, but like it's going to be a little bit more easier than usual, you know?
When you're fighting at a weight class where you're so much taller than almost all or all of your opponents, like what's the key to being successful? Is it having superior footwork? Is it operating behind, you know, that 80-inch reach of yours? What's the key to being successful with that kind of height advantage?
I think it depends on how you're going to fight. Depends on how you fight. I do use my reach, but a lot of times I'm in the mix on the inside. It's just how being confident in what you're doing, you know, whether it's the inside or the outside. Mm.
Is there a particularly difficult type of fighter or opponent that, you know, when you have that kind of height, it's just difficult to fight against, whether it's a much smaller guy or a nimble guy, or what's the most difficult kind of opponent for you?
I don't really have a difficult opponent. It's just how I'm going to fight that fight. What style am I going to use to win the fight?
For you, what's happened for you the last few years? Because I watched you coming up the pro ranks. I remember watching the draw that you had back in 2019. You were obviously good, but you know, after watching that fight and some fights before, like I don't know where this guy is going to go. And then in the last year or so, you know, you've showcased incredible power. That win over Erickson Lubin was as impressive as they get. One of the best fights that we've seen in the year. Like, what's changed for you the last couple of years, if anything?
We matured. We were still 20 years old when we fought Clark. You know, I still think I won that fight, of course. But we were still young. You know, a lot of these kids that fight at 20 years old, they're still fighting people 0-3 or 1-3, barely having any fights, barely fighting a 6-rounder, and we were already fighting a 10-rounder. So we're growing, we're maturing more. We're now 25. We're ready to fight for a title. Everything's lining up now.
You mentioned your sister is a pro boxer. She's fighting on this card as well. Do you like that? Does it give you something else to worry about? How do you feel about having your sister fight on your card?
I'm excited. You know, she works every camp with me. You know, she's working just as hard. So for her to have this platform to fight on, it's something she deserves.
How does it work there? Do you watch her fight beforehand? Do you have to focus on yours? How is that going to work for you?
I could do both. Of course, I want to see it. I want to see her fight. It's like watching a good movie and then not seeing the ending. I have to see the ending.
I can understand that. I think it'd be impossible to not watch at that point. You are the interim title holder at 154, the WBC belt. Obviously, Jermell Charlo has all the titles at 154. Do you think he's ever going to fight you? Or are you anticipating fighting for a vacant belt someday? Will you wait for a world title shot or go up to 160? What's kind of your plan over the next year?
Well, we'll see what he does after this fight, but hopefully we do get to fight with him, you know. But I'm not him. There's the business part of boxing. But we do want to fight him because right now he's considered the best 154. And I like to have that title for myself.
If you were him, would you fight him? Would you fight you, I should say?
I don't know. a 6'6" guy's pretty crazy in the weight class. But, you know, with my mentality, yeah, I like to fight everybody.
All right, Sebastian, I want to hit you with some rapid fire questions for a new segment on the show that we are calling the Standing Eight Count. And the first question is, the greatest fighter of all time is who?
Oh, Mayweather. Mayweather's always going to be the best.
The one in-ring weapon that another fighter has that you wish you had in your arsenal?
Deontay Wilder's right hand.
I tell you what, if you had Wilder's right hand at junior middleweight, nobody would ever want to fight you. You'd have to force everybody.
No.
If you could fight anyone from a previous generation, who would it be?
A lot of people like to compare me to Tommy Hearns. I think that would be a great fight.
Oh, man, that's a great answer. You and Tommy Hearns at 154 would be unbelievable. When your career is over, you will have won titles in how many weight classes?
We'll see how much God will let me move up, you know. Maybe I'll never move this weight class. I'll have the same problem as Sergio, so, you know, we'll see.
Sergio's out there trying to fight Jake Paul, so don't try to be like Sergio, okay? That's
yeah, right.
All right. Prime Andre Ward versus prime Canelo Alvarez, who wins?
I have Andre Ward. Andre Ward's very, very smart.
Yeah, great defense, too. That's what makes him so tough to
beat. Oh, yeah, definitely.
If you could fight in one arena anywhere, where would it be?
I've been fighting in my dream arenas already, so I'll probably fight in Staples again. You know?
Southern like California?
Staples. California. I love California.
All right, last two. The best part of being 6'6" is what?
I don't know. I can see everybody's top of their heads, you know?
And the worst part of being 6'6" is what?
Sometimes I don't fit in doorways.
I would have thought airplanes. I mean, I'm 6'3", and I hate flying airplanes.
That's equally as bad. Yeah. I completely forgot about that. That's equally as bad.
Well, Sebastian, good to talk to you, man. Good luck on October 8th, and hopefully 2023 is when we see you in those world title fights you're looking for. Good to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Sergio Mora and Sebastian Fedora for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate Rust Resistant Griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge. It reaches up to 500 degrees. The Weber Works Prep cook and store system keeps cooking supplies handy, and you can carry all the food, condiments, and utensils you need. Get fired up for your new Weber Slate Rust
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between Lisa and West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is expertly crafted from natural latex, natural wool, and certified safe foams to elevate your sleep sanctuary and support a greener tomorrow. Plus, every purchase helps fuel Lisa's work with shelters and those in need. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Lisa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Lisa.com/iHeart. That's LEESA.com/iHeart.